Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
With me is former Taoiseach and Labour leader Joan Burton and journalist Lise Hand to look at the stories making the news this Saturday. And one of the more surprising news stories making the news is on Thursday, Ciara Doherty was hosting The Hard Shoulder and she had Michael O'Leary, the chief executive of Ryanair Group, on. And one of the things that she asked him about was whether or not Ryanair would fit Starlink communications to its 737 so that people on Ryanair would be able to watch Wi-Fi or use Wi-Fi on the planes. Unsurprisingly, Michael O'Leary said effectively, to hell with the people on the planes. Flights are 90 minutes long. They can stare at the back of the seat if they want because it'll cost us threepence in fuel if we put the yoke on the roof. She then said that Elon Musk says it won't cost you threepence in fuel. And this is what O'Leary said in response.
And I frankly wouldn't pay any attention to anything that Elon Musk puts on that cesspit of his called X. He was the guy who advocated getting Donald Trump elected. I would pay no attention whatsoever to Elon Musk. He's an idiot. Very wealthy, but he's still an idiot.
Now, what this has begotten is the oddest spat, which is a fight between the world's richest man and the chief executive of Ryanair, because Elon Musk has now come out to say that the Ryanair CEO is a complete idiot who should be fired and has gone on to suggest that the best way to fire him is to purchase Ryanair, which he could do because of his vast wealth, and then fire O'Leary. I suspect that might be counterproductive, Lise, given that O'Leary is a significant shareholder in Ryanair and would therefore be massively enriched if Musk was to do this.
It would be a fine exit past the package, I have to say. It really would. And there's no doubt about it. You know, this is one of these stories. I mean, there are two characters, the sort of people that would bring a knife to a gunfight, you know, or a gun, yeah, or even a gun to a knife fight. I mean, they are not known for de-escalation. So one would wonder, you know, will this war of words actually erupt into something further? And the interesting thing about this as well, sometimes when you get spats like this online, somebody is coming from a position of total ignorance. But here you have Michael O'Leary, who has, you know, knows airplanes and aircraft inside out. And Elon Musk, who regularly pops rockets up and down to the space station. So, you know, you do have people who actually know what they're talking about here, but they're also extremely forthright. And Michael O'Leary normally takes on, you know, minor bodies like the European Union and the Irish government. So he's now decided to go for the big guns. And I think he also, in that interview, called Donald Trump a liar as well. So, you know, he's doing his usual thing of just scattergun abuse everywhere. And normally people will just laugh it off. But you see, you don't know what you're dealing with here. I mean, Elon Musk is the sort of man that might actually follow this through and attempt to buy the airline. Or maybe Donald Trump will just send in the, you know, the 101s and, you know.
Maybe I am cynical, but I would have thought everybody in Ryanair is thinking that is grand. 150 million followers on social media for Elon Musk. The best free advertising we've had in years.
There will be, I guarantee you, by the time I probably leave the studio, there will be billboards up with some class of ad featuring Elon Musk's visage. You're absolutely correct.
So this, though, for Joan, their Christmas present, they're going to bring him to Starlink, bring him on Starlink, and the rest will be history. And they can make it up on the, do we call it a plane?
We do. Now, this is one of those, though, where sort of the joking aside, it continues the descent into how weird has the world gotten. We have a chief executive of an airline fighting with the world's richest man, who is a US defense contractor and partially responsible for the election of Donald Trump. If you said something like that 10 or 15 years ago, people would go, that is, you couldn't even have it as a plot in a movie.
Well, I think, you know, that's in partly the impact of social media. It's just so pervasive. And, you know, a lot of the comments are slightly mad, particularly in a row like this. So I imagine it'll have maybe a short life, but probably quite a good life in terms of people who are into social media.
Well, while we're on the topic of social media, there's an awful lot of coverage around the slightly more serious end of things, with Micheál Martin being quoted as saying that social media needs to have stronger laws. Meanwhile, TikTok says that they're trying to get out ahead to some degree of legislation by rolling out age verification technology. This has says the field lease of something that we have heard being said by various different arms of politics for years at this point, with nobody doing anything.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, a lot of the stories about, say, this morning in the, you know, or this week in the papers about ChatGPT, about TikTok, about Grok and so on, they do have a common thread, as in there are governments everywhere, not just here in this country, really struggling to keep up with the pace at which new technologies are being introduced. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, nobody would have understood the letters, you know, LLM, or certainly AI. If you had a farming background, you certainly think have a totally different take on it. So, you know, there's been a massively steep learning curve with everybody on the advance in technologies. And with that great power should come great responsibility, but doesn't, because the platform most of the tech platforms really don't give a toss. They're just all about the product, trying to get it into, push it out to many people as possible.
Can I devil's advocate that a little? Because, yeah. I mean, Twitter is what, 2006, 2007 it was created. By 2010, there were people saying this is effectively a publisher getting to act like not a publisher. There were people raising concerns about Facebook. By the 2016 election, there were multiple reports and analyses that showed the capacity of social media to skew democracy. We're 10 years on from that. No. Nothing has been done.
Absolutely.
And remember, a lot of this was based on the fact that children were being shown naked on various platforms, and that's not acceptable. And it's not just parents, I think, who'd be concerned about that. I think everybody would. So,
but was anybody sounding, I mean, during your period in government, was anybody sounding alarm bells? Was anybody saying this is a significant issue, we should be getting ahead of this?
Well, I think people constantly talked about it, and there's been an accumulation of laws and changes in terms of rules. But the fact is that, you know, technology and the advances in technology are certainly faster than most parliaments can actually respond to. But I think the main thing is just to make sure that these guys have to report and they have to lay it out, and then people can make an assessment. But simply going in and talking to a parliamentary committee, you know, you can just imagine the executives coming in, they're expert. The people who are questioning them are probably not, even though they may love and use the technology themselves.
Well, I think, yeah, but I think there's sort of a concentration of minds now, because you can argue all around the houses, and people have done for a long time, about what constitutes freedom of speech. And this, of course, is the main, I suppose, the platform that every argument starts with. What, you know, constitutes freedom of speech, and what means curbing it. But I think there's universal, in every sense of the word, like geographical and literal, that basically allowing a tool to undress children and women is not a force for good. There is absolutely no reason why that thing should exist. So I think it probably took something as Michal described, shocking as this tool, to really coalesce opinion around this. And you could even see a shift in Elon Musk from going from doing the usual response to this, which is just a middle finger up at everybody. But such was has been the outpouring of absolute opprobrium against this, and threats to block, to geo-block X stroke Grok, that I think there has been a slight change in tone. Now, there's no doubt that this could have been whipped down straight away, and I don't think anybody believes for a minute that the arguments that it's a complicated task. It isn't. But unfortunately, it's still seen as a money-making tool. I mean, again, it's a Streisand effect. I mean, probably most people hadn't heard of Grok. Now suddenly it's one of the most downloaded apps, yeah, in the Irish
charts. Number one free app.
And can you imagine somebody who's 10 now, and for some reason or other has been able to be on social media and has, you know, disturbing photos and personal images and so on. Imagine when they're 17 and 18 and they're meeting their pals in their leaving cert year or in their college years, and they're all saying, oh, we have a lovely photo of you. I mean, that's a horrific thought. And I'd say a lot of people, you know, who are caught in that and the way they're going, that's bound to happen. I think they'll be extremely upset and disturbed. So, you know, young people and students have enough problems as it is without allowing, lack of regulation to add to the score.
It'll take it.
Sorry, go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, no, I'm going to say I think it will take a massive coordinated effort, and I don't have a huge amount of faith that that's going to happen, you know, across, say, EU and other jurisdictions to tackle this, because I think any kind of piecemeal approach will just get laughed at.
Can I just ask one thing on it, which is, I was intrigued by the way that any response from the social media giants, particularly from X, was to talk about the egregiousness of the abuse of children or creation of children, images of children, which is already illegal and to some extent provides a straw man. But the technology can be used to create fake audio, fake video, to get you to say things that you didn't say, to put words in politicians' mouths, to put people in humiliating positions even if they're non-sexual. All of that is still damaging and still problematic. But the response to that is, well, you can. It's like using a pen. It is merely a tool.
Yeah, and you see, this is part of the problem. And it goes back to actually what I was sort of saying originally, is that you have just incredible advances in technology and the guardrails. I suppose it's not also helped by the fact that there is an administration in the White House that doesn't believe in any guardrails at all. So to put it mildly, actually would just probably ram a Mack truck through any guardrails and resist every opportunity to do so, to place them in. So when you have a permissive administration like that and so much flows from America and, you know, the tech companies and the Silicon Valley take their cues from that. So unless there is some kind of extremely fast, rapid, coordinated response and understanding that not only do you have to deal with what's happening now, as in these denudifying tools and also the ongoing, as you correctly say, threat to democracy in terms of bots, fake content. But they also have to project forward and say, what else do we have to actually anticipate for?
Is it a generational thing? Is it that the politicians are just not of the generation that grew up with this being the norm and therefore it's not front of mind?
It's possibly the politicians and the lawmakers and the policymakers. But I think it will become an issue among those who are most affected by it, which are the younger people, the younger generations.
They're I think in many ways this has to be something that's dealt with in different countries at cabinet level, because unless you get an agreement among politicians and not just people having conversations and committees in parliaments where people come in, tell their scale and then things happen slowly. I think you need to do it quite rapidly and to put in a framework, update and review that framework regularly, because the tech is changing all the time. So even if you do, if you prepare an act this year, it'll probably be somewhat out of date by the end of next year. So all of that kind of, I think you need to sit down and say, look, we need new things for new times.
I think one thing that could be done with relative speed, and I think it's a key element across all of this, is to very quickly and rapidly introduce into primary and secondary education a class on media literacy, on how to actually deal with the internet.
I think it'll make a blind bit of difference.
I do. I actually do. I actually am a firm believer that if you tool up people, this is a war. I mean, it essentially is an information and technological war. And we are sending kids out there utterly unarmed. So I think that if you give them the weapons and the tools to understand what they're seeing, to source what they're seeing, to deal with what they're seeing, I think that goes a huge amount of way to re-empowering kids, to giving them power to actually understand what they're seeing and do something about it.
Now, if we thought AI was a Gordian knot, was a recalcitrant and challenging problem, it is nowt compared to Enoch Burke. Enoch Burke is back in the papers because a high court judge has said, what bit of don't go back to the school did you not understand? And he is being called and not called, he's being an arrest warrant to have him brought back in on Monday. One assumes with the prospect of going back to Mountjoy for having again breached a court order. Where does this end? Is this until he starts drawing the pension? We keep doing this cycle.
Oh, I mean, it reminds you of that song from Sound of Music, you know, how do you solve a problem like Maria? You know, you can sort of see them inside the school kind of singing this to the heavens in despair. I mean,
but
I don't know
the student at the heart of all of this. Well, not at the heart, because the heart of this is his behaviour, not the original issue. But that student must be long gone at this point.
Well, this is absolutely completely true. I mean, this is clearly just nobody knows exactly how to handle this. I mean, this is somebody who has already done over, I think it's something like 560 days over 3 years in the clink. And, gets let out in order to prepare his defence against the case to get for his dismissal.
Under the instruction, don't go back to the school.
Don't go back to the school. And the first thing he does is he goes back to the school. And, you know, he, and I mean, but, you know, the sort of, the mind melding part of this is that, you know, most people here who have been following the story understand that he's landed himself in this, you know, predicament for his conduct following an instruction from the principal to address this particular pupil by their preferred pronouns. And yet, I mean, I spend an awful lot of time as part of my job listening to, say, American right-wing podcasts, and his name occasionally crops up. And it's all as a martyr because he's been jailed for his views on being transgender. And when I hear this, I just want to, like, punch a hole in the wall because
the judge in open court has made clear, knock yourself out with your thoughts on transgenderism, Enoch. Just absolutely. Don't shout at the principal and don't show up at the school.
Absolutely. So they clearly now, you know, he's been dragged back in front of the High Court. He may end up being returned to jail. They just, it's just that he seems to, and, you know, the sort of extended members of his family honestly seem to think that the law is applies to them only as they see fit to follow it, as opposed to this is a rule.
So come on, you were a legislator, John. What do you do when you have
and I was involved in the in actually the preparation of a lot of this legislation back in the day when I was in the Dáil and a minister. And our legislation is actually quite good legislation. It went through a lot of thoughtful discussion at the time for quite a long period of time. I think the only thing that you can do really with Enoch Burke is just try and get his family to talk to him. But again, they may have exactly
the same opposite effect
you want. But then maybe, you know, that there's some collective discussion with the family because they can't do what they're trying to do, which is to upend valid legislation in Ireland, which gives people in Ireland rights should they be transgender.
That has now to do with it. It is to do with his behaviour thereafter and some and a continuing breaching of a court order. What do you do when you have somebody who willfully, continuously breaches court orders and jail doesn't seem to dissuade them of that course of action?
Well, the only response, if you like, we have in law is that there are laws, and if they're breaking the laws and they're refusing to abide by the laws, well then at some stage they're going to be talking to a judge in a court and seeing what can be done, because it must be extremely distressing to a lot of the parents and a lot of the students. That's their school. They probably, for the most part, love their school. And there's this whole thing going on about it that certainly the younger students probably don't fully understand. He's obviously a very bright guy, but he's not acting in a very bright way. He needs, and I think he and his family need to have a discussion. They can campaign on whatever they like, but they should let children go to school free of being subject to this kind of uncertainty and nervousness.
Texting. I said it before and I'll say it again. The school should close, let everybody go, rename the school and rehire everyone bar Enoch Burke. Now, in one way, Joe, this is where we're heading. I mean, at this point, there is no other available solution because the garnishing of the wages, garnering, whichever it is, has had no effect. I mean, he's 200 grand in hock and it makes no difference either.
None at all. I mean, you know, I suppose it's also, I suppose, the story is kept alive by, you know, the fact that he's constantly in the news as well. I mean, this doesn't help as well. I mean, I suppose he has done the state some service in terms of he has provided the internet with a very handy meme, you know, so that can be deployed in various situations. But, you know, it shows, I just think that the family come across as just a fairly abhorrent bunch of arrogant people that really just seem to think that the law doesn't apply to them.
Particular religious views to which they're absolutely entitled. But, however, they can't disturb an entire school by behaving in a way, or one of their family members behaving in a way, and they, as it were, backing that, so that school becomes, I'm sure the teachers in the school and the administration in the school are doing their best to shield pupils in the school. But, you know, it's as somebody who's, well, you know, I've taught at university level. When people are in classes together, there, you know, people develop relationships with other people in the school. They have views, they have ideas. And the fact that they're secondary school students doesn't limit that. So I feel very sorry for the teachers and the pupils and families attending that school. And I would imagine they would want to see some action being taken if he continues to breach what the judge has, if you like, laid out should be what happens.
Well, we'll see on Monday morning what happens if he is arrested over the weekend, as the judge has ordered, and arrives back in front of the High Court. We'll see what the High Court has to say at that stage. 53106, if you want to get in touch, 087-1400-106. Issues pertaining to RTE are all over the front pages again. It feels a bit like 2 years ago, because in the front of the Irish Times, there's a big picture of Ryan Tubridy saying, "I felt hung out to dry. I couldn't see the bigger picture. I would have done things differently. I was on top of my, if I was on top of my game, but I wasn't." And then on the front of the Daily Mail, the RTE chief, this being Director General Kevin Backhurst, is facing a confidence vote from the SIPTU union, and the CFO has just departed after only 18 months in role. Things don't seem to be quieting down at the National Broadcaster.
They certainly don't. I mean, there is a sense of deja vu about all this, you know, going back to the turbulent summer of 2023. And, you know, it's clearly a very unhappy camp out in Montrose. I mean, that's the one glaring thing that jumps out from this. You have you know, the staff are massively discombobulated.
This is RTE's own soap.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. And we're all, you know, reading Coupe de Fuckle every day about it. And it just got very meaty again today. It's all over the place.
But is it just bad luck on the DG's front? Is it just that it's a difficult job to do?
I mean, he's parachuted in, you know, to try and clean up the mess after this, the whole payment controversy and so on. And then, you know, at the same time, part of that was massive outsourcing of their mainstay kind of gigs, I suppose, like Fair City, the Lotto,
the Late Show.
Huge amount of redundancies, and they're looking now for a second wave of redundancies to get.
But on the other
people.
Hand, we see from, you know, the front page of a number of the papers, particularly the Irish Times there, that Ryan Tubridy might like to be on his way back into RTE. And if so, maybe they'll go back to happier times.
It's interesting that he is back doing on the media circuit now, doing the rounds. You know, he recently got married, moved back. And, you know, does talk about those days and how it affected him and so on. And
it affected him very deeply.
Affected him very deeply. And, you know, one can understand that and have, you know, a level of sympathy. One minute you're sort of flying high and in a great job. The next thing, you know, the brickbats are coming at you from all directions. I genuinely really had a lot of sympathy for him. But I would also have to make the point that I think that some of the brickbats were possibly thrown by, you know, at him. There were self-inflicted wounds as well. I think there was a certain, aspects of it weren't handled very well by him and by people maybe around him and so on.
Most notably, he was in the process of getting back on air and put out a statement that put the kibosh on it. That was...
Yeah, and I think that really was... After. Yeah, that was a bit sort of strange. But, you know, RTE's ability to shoot themselves in both feet simultaneously is quite extraordinary. I mean, even...
But what about this confidence vote, though? I mean, this is one of the largest unions representing workers in RTE, who's essentially saying you've taken 750 million quid of state money, and as we see it, all that has been used to do is hollow out the core of what made this organisation valuable.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's been a huge lack of sort of any kind of vision, direction, any kind of cohesive plan for... I mean, this is the National Broadcaster. It is expected, and if you actually put it against the backdrop of what we've just been talking about, which is misinformation, disinformation, every country and every democracy needs one, if not two, ideally, trusted sources of information and news where they were going to get, you know, an unbiased and responsibly put together information. We expect that from RTE. We expect it from any of, you know, our national broadcasters. And yet you just seem to have... All it seems to be about is cutting and hollowing out and no really, where are we going now? Where, you know, where's our plan? Where's our strategy? How are we going to face these difficulties and problems? let's hang on to the things that we're very good at. And they have there's a huge amount of really talented people out there who actually would love to get stuck into various projects and so on, and just don't actually, you know, aren't given the time or the wherewithal.
And meanwhile, the financial problem continues. License fees down, I think, about 13 or 14% year on year.
Well, people feel, obviously, from all of the conflict going on, that they don't need to pay it.
Yeah,
that's the problem with the license fee. The numbers not paying, as I understand it, are increasing. But in terms of RTE, they have a very good history. If they can get their act together and if they can do it relatively quickly.
There's so many, they just seem to make some odd decisions. I mean, I have to say, even I did raise a quizzical eyebrow yesterday when I saw the lineup for the Late Late Show tonight, which includes one of the guests is Claire Byrne, which I kind of thought, well, Claire Byrne, great broadcaster, is coming into this parish quite shortly, which is the competition, and she will be in competition. So
9 to 12 weekdays starting 4th of February.
So why are they giving her, you know, she's great, but why are they giving her a voice? I mean, I did sort of think, why would you make that sort of decision? Like, that's a small thing, but it sort of plays into the greater, you know, the greater scheme of, Do they not sort of have a sense that they're in a, you know, an existential race for survival and against increasingly, you know, more sophisticated, powerful other competitors as well?
And remember as well, there are an awful lot of 12 and 15 year olds who are on social media. They're very expert on media, whether you agree with them or not. And they're their next generation that they also have to attract with the status of being the national broadcaster and the one that you need to listen to if you don't, even if you don't totally like
it. They should change
the
name to RT TikTok maybe or something like that.
We have suggestions in relation to how to handle Enoch. Do you remember the Simpsons episode where the advertising billboards came to life and terrorised people? The only way to stop them was to ignore them. I feel we should use the same tactic when dealing with Enoch Burke. And another, use supervised public service, brackets, picking up rubbish, as an alternative to prison for Enoch. So essentially a one-man chain gang in the form of Enoch Burke. Guys, thank you very much. That is Lise Hand, journalist Joan Burton, former Taoiseach.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.